Recording. Hi, everybody. Good morning and welcome back to our Vedanta class. We meet every fourth Sunday of the month from 10 to 11 Pacific. And today I have an amazing guest for us. His name's Nitin Pabawal, and I know him from the Vedanta Society. He's been a longtime Vedantin. He's studied Vedanta a long time and very intensely. In fact, 3 years of his life he spent just studying Vedanta, like nothing else. So that was pretty awesome. So he's here to talk to us about how to experience ultimate reality. So welcome, Nitin.
Thank you, Parama. Thanks for inviting me to this wonderful group. Very happy to be here. And it's a wonderful service that you're doing, bringing the teachings of Vedanta to more people, and very glad to meet everybody who are so open to hearing these truths and embracing them in their lives. So very happy to be here.
Thanks. Good, good, good. So let's start with this. You're talking about ultimate reality. Yeah. What are we experiencing now? If this is not ultimate reality, what is this? And then what's the difference?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. So if it is the ultimate reality, we have to be experiencing it even now, right here, right now, every moment, because otherwise, how can that be the ultimate reality? And so in our every experience, we are experiencing it, but we're kind of missing it. We're not noticing it. And that's what Vedanta says, that we have to just notice what the ultimate reality is in our normal day-to-day, moment-to-moment experience and just stay with it. And that basically is the whole summum bonum of what Vedanta is trying to tell us. And we will go ahead.
I was just going to ask a question because that sounds a little bit like mindfulness, what a lot of people describe as mindfulness, but I know it's not exactly mindfulness. Can you like differentiate a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, in mindfulness, it's more about being in the present moment and being aware of things either internally or externally, but doesn't involve a lot of inquiry process. So what we experience and what the actual reality is gets mixed up, so to speak. And we'll go through a process today to try to see how do we inquire into our own experience and get to that underlying ultimate reality and understand our own experience in a deeper way. So to be able to notice what is the reality of this experience and what is the nature of this experience. And that is what is going to be helping us notice it and stay with it every moment. So difference with mindfulness will be more about the inquiry process and being able to go deeper into our experience to understand what the ultimate reality is.
That sounds amazing. So how did you figure this out? What was your process to get to this point?
It's just grace of God, of course. It's all pure blessing that I was going through a journey in my life and seeking more meaning and purpose, and never knew about Vedanta before, even though I'm from India and Vedanta is also from India. But interestingly, when I was on this journey, luckily everything aligned and I got introduced by with the teachings of Vedanta, and then watching some online videos as well as doing some training in India. When I came back to US after that, luckily again, one of the topmost teachers of Vedanta, Swami Sarva Priyananda, was posted to US, to Hollywood. And again, very luckily, I got this opportunity to be able to go and stay in the center there and study with him and other monks and also other teachers of Vedanta online. So I'm just so happy that it all aligned beautifully. So it wasn't an intellectual process on my part. It was more like things just getting aligned and me ending up there in the ashram and then studying with Swami Sarva Priyananda and also following other teachers. Yeah, so that's the crux. Like, you really need the grace of God and the grace of your teacher, the grace of God.
And I think that's what happens too, when you decide to like surrender to the process and say, I want to do this, you know, you go with the flow and things, as long as you follow it and don't try to swim upstream, it makes it easier for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like that's the whole crux of it. Like if you go with the flow and if you try to flow upstream or against the current, you always get hit by various waves and whatnot. But if you go with the flow, that's the smoothest way you can go through the whole life process. And the whole journey, the whole spiritual journey is about going with the flow that God has set for you. And God is ever gracious. Every moment is working to take you towards the highest reality, towards realizing what the highest truth is, in whichever way you appreciate it. And if you just go with the flow, then God will get you there. So that's the whole idea. The surrender
Perfect.
definitely is the most important thing, I feel.
Perfect. Okay, so let's start with step one. What do we do?
All right. So, yeah, thanks for getting us started with those questions. So, basically, I'm hoping that it's going to be a very interactive discussion and something interesting and fun for everybody, and hopefully, by grace of God, useful as well. So, yeah, let's start off with just understanding what spirituality means to us, right? Like we are all in some way or the other spiritual. So what exactly is spirituality? And here I would like to hear from others as well as to what spirituality means for them. And we'll then try to take it a step forward. So as of now, if somebody wants to share what spirituality means to them, that would be great.
Good. Yeah, they're not shy. How about Marcia? You wanna, what does spirituality mean to you, Marcia? Maybe she is shy. How about you, Andrea? How about you?
Spirituality to me means knowing that we're all connected, that there is one mind, and everything is energy.
Very nice.
That's great and true.
I'll jump in.
Okay, Pam.
Spirituality is that oneness where you see, that all the sages throughout the ages had saw, that energy in the oneness and the grain of sand. And the William Blake and the heaven in a wildflower and Rumi, we are the ocean in a drop and the drop in the ocean. And when you feel that and see that from the crown all the way down to below the middle earth, that is spirituality to me. That is that passion that sparks my divinity, my search for divinity, my continuing connection, and also that heart. The passion of the heart is what continues that search for me.
I'd like to add that for me, spirituality, yes, it is the passion and it is the divinity in all that I am a part of and all around me is a part of. So there's only one. And sorry to be late, but.
That's okay. That's beautiful. Anybody else? Jerry, how about you? She's smiling. You have to unmute yourself.
I'm looking for the
There you
okay.
go.
Yeah, I would agree. It's feeling the oneness and creative energy all connected like a circle.
Beautiful. That's great.
Yeah, so those are wonderful insights into what spirituality means to different people. And if you notice, one common pattern is we're trying to get to a deeper truth. Like what we see, we do not see the oneness. We do not see the connectedness as far as the direct experience is concerned. We see diversity. We see everybody is separate from us. We take ourselves to be this limited identity, limited body, mind, and everybody else is separate. So we don't see that oneness. We don't see that connectedness in our normal experience. But spirituality is a process which takes us to a deeper truth where we are able to notice that oneness. We're able to notice that connectedness. And so that's beautiful. Like all the answers are in line with going deeper, deeper, and deeper into our existence and trying to understand what the actual truth is. And one of the things that I also love about spirituality is that it's usually a quest for lasting peace and joy. Like, why do we want to feel this oneness? Why do we want to feel this connectedness? Usually is driven by this quest for us to experience lasting peace and joy in our lives. And whether it be meaning and purpose, whether it be surrender to a higher power, whether it be seeing that oneness and connectedness, whether it be, like any of these things that we connect spirituality with is usually taking us towards that lasting peace and joy. And so if we try to understand what is it that brings lasting peace and joy, so it's great that we want to experience this lasting peace and joy, but what is it that will bring it to us? And if you look into our normal experience, like day-to-day experience, we will notice that usually when we are in harmony with ourselves and with things around us, that is when we usually experience the most peace and joy. When there is no conflict, either internal or external, is when we feel peace and joy. And just many a times, internal conflict is more important than external. Like if we are in conflict with ourselves, if we are not being able to be ourselves, like we always say, right, let me be myself. And why do people say that? Usually it's because they want to be in harmony with their own inner personality, what they take themselves to be. And only when they're in harmony with that they will experience this peace and joy and happiness. And if you have internal conflict, even if the external is not in a state of harmony, let's say there might be war going on, or there might be a lot of miseries and sufferings that you might be noticing in the world. But if you have this inner harmony, you can approach it with a sense of peace, sense of calm, and you do your duty to be able to bring more harmony to the world as well, to the nature, to environment, to other people, to everything. And so if we look at it, it kind of boils down to being in harmony with ourselves and everything around us. But to be able to be in harmony with ourselves, we need to first know who we are. Like we take ourselves to be something, and then we try to be in harmony with that. But what if we are something beyond that? Or what if we are something different from what we take ourselves to? And that truth will remain, because that is the highest truth. It's not going to change. What we are is what we are. The mistake, the error that we introduce by taking ourselves to be something else is what causes this disharmony with what we actually are. Mm. And so it's a very important process. It's very important to inquire and to know who we truly are. And we can inquire into our own normal experience, because what we are every moment. And if we just inquire deep enough into it, we will be able to know who we truly are.
Yeah. Say that part again, because I think that's a very profound statement that we need to get deep in us, that not knowing who we are is what is causing our internal turmoil. And I don't think we really understand that it's that simple, because we think our inner turmoil is caused by everything that's going on outside of us, our relationships, our job, our crazy neighbors, whatever. So say that again, the way you said it, because that was so good.
Yeah. So just to repeat it, basically being in harmony with ourselves and everything around us is what is going to bring peace and joy in our lives. We experience it every day. We experience peace and joy and happiness only when we are in harmony. We can look into all our experiences when we felt that, oh, I'm happy. It's usually because we are in harmony. And we try to be in harmony with what we take ourselves to be. We take ourselves to be this personality, and hence we're trying to be in harmony with that personality, our likes, our dislikes, our tendencies, all of those, our desires, all of that. And we try to be in harmony with that. But what if we are something even deeper than what we take ourselves to be? What if we are something beyond what we take ourselves to be? Unless until we understand, unless until we know who we truly are, we will not be able to be in harmony with it. And hence, it is very important for us to really know who we truly are and then live life accordingly. And that is what is going to bring lasting peace and joy. Every moment of our life, if we can, if our actions can be informed by what we truly are and what we feel within, how we act externally is all in harmony with it, then naturally we will experience lasting peace and joy. And one more thing here is, what we truly are itself has to be lasting. Itself has to be permanent. It cannot be ever changing. It's not that my personality can keep changing on a day-to-day basis or a year-to-year basis. My likes and dislikes, my tendencies, all of these we do, our desires, all of these we do see keeps changing. And so if we try to be in harmony with something which is ever changing, we will never be able to get into a state of lasting harmony. And so two things are required here. One is that we have to be in harmony with ourselves. Three things, actually. We have to know who we are. We have to live life accordingly. And what we truly are itself has to be permanent. And then only it is possible to be in permanent, in a state of permanent peace and joy. Mm. And so that's the beauty of Vedanta. Vedanta is basically pointing it out to us that, hey, you take yourself to be a changing entity and you're trying to be in harmony with that. But really speaking, you are actually an unchanging permanent entity. And if you can just know that and be in harmony with that, all the problems will get dissolved. They might not get solved. Life will still throw problems at us. You know, we will have ups and downs of lives, no doubt about it. But the problems get dissolved. Mm-hmm. They don't have as much impact on us.
It's so simple, but it's so challenging in this life that we're all living.
Yeah.
So how do we do this?
Great.
How do we identify with that? That is all that is.
Yes, great question. So that's going to be our next exercise. And we'll try to investigate into our own experience, normal experience, and try to identify who we truly are and see if we can get to it. It's just a simple inquiry process. Current experience, you don't even have to try to remember a past experience. Here, experience doesn't mean like things they've gone through in life. Experience just means right now, right here, what am I experiencing? So to start it off, would love to hear from everybody, what are you experiencing right now? Like right now, right here, what are you experiencing?
Okay, I see Buzz. Buzz, let me hear from you.
Well, I'm here. So yeah. What was the question again?
That, what are you experiencing right now?
Oh, right now.
Right now.
I'm experiencing the joy of being here on your session, Lisa. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel good because sometimes I'm too busy to miss it and things like that. So when I've succeeded in being where I want to be, where I want to be there, I feel good that, hey, I got this done in my life. And I always look at those things. I look at the things that I've done in my life that I've wanted to do and I got done, and look at them as being the blessings that that are making me move forward in my life. And as we were just hearing, what's troubling is those times when you don't get it done, didn't get there in time, didn't get on. And what I've come to in my life at this point, being here for 3/4 of a century on the planet, is that here I am. Now, if I look for a reason to enjoy being here right now, then I am aware that all the things I did or didn't do in my life were part of what got me here. Because any little change in what we did sometime 10 years, 15, 30, 40 years ago could have made a big change in our life. I may not even be on the planet by now. So I look at that. I look back now on those things and go, oh, I didn't get there in time, but it was what was supposed to be because now I'm here. So as, is it Nikin?
Nikin.
Just said, yeah, look for a reason to enjoy the presence and know that everything you've done in your life was part of what got you there. So it was all a blessing, even though sometimes you look back and it didn't, it was part of what got me here. Hey, I'm here. That's good. Let's go forward.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to simplify the question because, of course, we are experiencing a lot of things. there's a lot of things that we are experiencing even at this current moment. There are a lot of emotions, their thoughts, their intellectual processes, and then there is all the external perceptions. What? So I'm going to limit our experience to one aspect of our experience, which is seeing. What are we seeing right now? If you can just say, what are you seeing right now? Just seeing. That's simply, you're just seeing things. So what are you seeing right now?
Well, talk about the physicality of actually what I'm seeing with my eyes, because what I'm seeing is a group of people gathered in a like-minded session to talk about how we can be more uplifted in our lives. And that makes me feel good. These Zoom sessions are like that. You know, you're with people that are on the other side of the planet sometimes, and all there, but that connection is there mentally and spiritually. And I like that. So That's what I'm seeing.
Yes, you're seeing people, group of people, and then related thoughts and emotions are there in your mind about those. Anybody else, what are you seeing right now?
Well, I can tell you that what I am seeing, and it is so interesting that, and I'm not alone in this, is what I am seeing and aware of is that this last year that many of us rose up in our spirituality and saw beyond, and now we are experiencing that great beyond where things are manifesting in brighter days, so to speak, and people are having a hard time with that change. They don't want to go with the new change, it seems like to me. They are seeing even more conflict within themselves, if that makes sense at all. So what I am seeing is that I am experiencing that a little my own self too. And so again, if you turned off everything and just listened to you, I'd be in clam happy heaven, you and Buzz. But the reality is our reality is filled with information that we rose up, as that wonderful poet said, but now we're in complacency.
Wow, that's a profound seeing experience that you're having right now.
Yeah.
And I want to simplify even further. In order for us to be able to use simple inquiry into our experience, I'm just trying to narrow down our experience as much as possible so that we can just take one aspect and inquire into it. And so I'm going to take what Buzz had said, right? He's seeing a group of people. Let's just take that very simple experience of seeing a group of people. Let's for the moment, let's even ignore how we feel about it. But it's a very simple experience. I'm seeing a group of people. I'm seeing a screen. I'm seeing objects in my room. I'm seeing various kind of things. That's what our experience will tell us, that I see many different objects. I see many different people. But is that really true? If we try to inquire into it, what if I say that all you're seeing is light? There is light which is coming off the screen, the computer screen that is falling into your eyes. There is light reflecting off different objects around you, different people, and falling into your eyes. The only thing you ever see is light entering into the eyes. You never see anything apart from light entering into your eyes. These objects, people, they do not actually enter into your eyes directly. It's only light that is coming off these objects or reflecting off these that enter into your eyes. And so would that be a wrong statement to make, that the only thing you ever see is just light entering into your eyes?
I think that's beautiful, and I think it's very true. And when you brought it back to get rid of the emotion and look around, I live in paradise. I look around and I've got flowers and greenery everywhere, and the light is gorgeous this morning. In that reality, there's really a beautiful sun today where I am.
Yeah. So we see different colors, we see different brightness. It all boils down to different frequencies of the light or different wavelengths of the light that are falling into onto our retina, and with different brightness. There's a different intensity of the light that is falling in different parts of our retina. But everything kind of, if we look into the deeper aspect of this experience, that's going one level deeper, that anything that I ever see, and I'm only talking about seeing right now, I'm not talking about feelings, I'm not talking about emotions right now, I'm just trying to narrow it down to one very limited aspect of our experience, which is just seeing things around us. So the only thing we see is light entering into our eyes. And so that's a way to go deeper. That's a way to do an inquiry process, to look into our experience and then go to a deeper level of truth that, hey, I'm not really seeing all these objects. Only thing that I ever see is light. So let's go even further. Let's go even deeper than that. Do we really see the light? The light falls on our retina. It gets absorbed by our retina. And that's it. It's gone. We know through science that whatever information is falling onto our retina is converted into neurons, into neurosignals, and then travel through the optical nerves and go into the visual cortex, or whatever part of the brain where it is supposed to be interpreted. And so even the light aspect is dissolved. It's not even the light that we see, because there is really no light reaching our brain. There is not, the light gets dissolved at the retina level itself. What reaches our brain is just some biochemical electro signals, which are neurons firing in our brains. And that is what we eventually see. We do not even see the light. Mm-hmm. So that's going even one level deeper. That I'm not seeing these objects directly. I'm only seeing light. I'm not even seeing the light. It's only the neurons firing in my brains that I call seeing. That experience that I call seeing is nothing but neurons firing in the visual cortex of my brain. Mm-hmm. Now, if I say, we don't even see that. We don't even see the neurons firing in our brains. Because what would it be like to see neurons firing in the brain? We would see some slushy gray matter with some neurons firing, buzzing here and there. That should have been our experience, right? If that is what we were actually seeing. But that is not what we're seeing even. What we see is this vivid world of colors and brightness, different intensities, all appearing in something. We do not know what is that thing in which all of this is appearing, because everything was reduced to light and then to just neurosignals in the brain. But then suddenly, how does our experience show us such vividity and such colors and brightness? So if we investigate into that experience even further, we will realize that it's not even the brain and the neurosignals that we're seeing. We are actually seeing, if I may call it, an interpretation of whatever information is coming to our brain in our consciousness. We are only seeing an interpretation of the information that comes to our brain. We're not seeing any of it directly. We're only seeing the interpretation of the information. In our consciousness, there is this vivid experience of colors and brightness, and that is what we see. So that's going even one level deeper. That the only thing I ever see is interpretation or some sort of a appearance of vivid colors and brightness in our experience, in our consciousness, sorry. Same thing can be done for other aspects of our experience, whether it be hearing, whether it be smelling, tasting, touching, whatever sense perceptions that we have. It's only information first reaching that sense organ, getting converted into neurosignals, reaching our brain, the respective parts of our brain. But that is also not what we experience. We experience an interpretation in consciousness. Now, So far, so good. Any questions on this? Like any doubts or questions or any disagreements?
I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
So in our dream state, we have vivid dreams many times. Is that our interpretation of what's going on in our brain, given the information we've known in the past?
Absolutely. Even dreams we know from science are nothing but neural activities in our brain. While we are sleeping, there are certain neural activities going on in our brain, and then those neural activities get interpreted in our consciousness. And that is what we call the dream. And it's a great, great example, because in dream, light is not actually entering from external world into our eyes and then traveling to the brain. That part is even missing. The only thing is that there is neural activity in the brain, and that gets interpreted in our consciousness, and that is what we see. So yes, dream world, waking world is always nothing but appearances of light, of some sort of images, of some sort of sounds, of some sort of sensations in our consciousness. And it's just interpretation of signals in the brain. So any other questions? Okay.
I was wondering about being in the dream state in regard to consciousness. I've read that you're working out your issues or changing your consciousness. And could you give me a little interpretation of, like, if you were awake in the daytime and memories of the past come up without a trigger, or even with a trigger, or if you're sleeping and you wake up and you're regurgitating a story from the past, what's the relationship there, and how is your brain working out the story?
Yeah, so definitely not a brain scientist, but of course we know that we have a memory store in the brain where all the experiences that we go through in the waking are stored. We register those in our memory part of the brain. And then some of those aspects are strong enough to bubble up while we are sleeping. And then brain has this magical power to connect things randomly. You know, one thing here will get connected with another thing somewhere else. And it will create its own imagination in the dream, or even in the waking world, when we start thinking about different aspects of our memory, we start connecting things. But all of those, if we see, can be boiled down to activity in the brain. Everything has an activity associated in the brain, and then it is interpreted in our consciousness. And that is what we call as seeing or hearing or even thinking. Because even if you look at our thoughts are also in the form of some sort of visual images or some sort of sounds. We talk about this voice in the head, where, you know, we are constantly talking in our head. There are words going on in our head. Those words that we listen to, or that we feel that we are listening to, is also nothing but neural activity in the brain, which then gets interpreted in consciousness. And those interpretations of that imagery and sound of the thoughts is what we call as thoughts and emotions. Emotions are also nothing but thoughts, but they are just associated with some sort of feeling. Like, for example, if you have an emotion of anger, of course, there is a lot of words going on in the mind, in the brain. We're thinking too much about a person or about a thing that we did not like. And there's a constant voice going on in our head. But then there are also the associated sensations of the brain feeling heated up or stressed, or we having palpitations, or our breathing is hard. And those are the things which we combine together and call anger.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, anything that we experience is nothing but some sort of sights, like images or sounds or words or sensations like touch, smell, taste in our consciousness. Whether it be gross in the sense it can be more tangible and physical in nature, which feels more concrete, or it can be less tangible, which we call thoughts. But eventually, in the end, we can boil everything down. Every aspect of our experience can be boiled down to just this interpretation in our consciousness. And it constitutes of some sights, some sounds, some sensations, ranging from gross to subtle. And that's how we can boil, narrow down our experience. And the reason I'm doing this is because we're trying to inquire into our experience. And so first we're trying to understand the structure of our experience, what experience really means. And now we'll try to get a little deeper and try to identify who I am in this experience. So I'm going to make a statement. If object A knows object A cannot know object B directly. What I mean is there is some sort of information that has to travel from object B to object A. It has to become an integral part of object A, and that alone is what object A knows. For instance, light travels from external objects, falls on our retina, it becomes an integral part of our eye, and that is all the eye knows. I cannot know anything else directly. It can only know what becomes a part of it. Similarly, the information from the eyes, the neurosignals, travel to the brain, become an integral part of the brain, and that is all that the brain knows. You can look at anything in the world. Nothing, no object A will know object B directly. It will only know information coming from object B to object A, and that is all it will ever be able to know. Mm-hmm. So this brain, neurosignals that are there in the brain are known by the brain, but that is not our experience. Our experience is not of a slushy gray matter with neurons firing here and there. We have an experience of consciousness in which there is this appearance of sights, sounds, and sensations. And the only reason why we are able to know this, the only way we can know this is if we are that consciousness. Mm-hmm. Because if we were not that consciousness, if we were something separate from consciousness, then again, information from this interpretation in consciousness would have to travel to us somehow. And then we would have only known that information which would have traveled to us. And this would have gone into an infinite regress. Because if we take ourselves to be, if we do not take ourselves to be consciousness and something else which is apart from consciousness to which the information is traveling, and we do not take ourselves to be that also and take ourselves to be something else, and then that process can go ad infinitum. Mm-hmm. And so we have to stop at one place and own up and say, I am this, in which there is this appearance of objects and peoples and things, and it is integral to me, because that is the only way I'm able to know it. Otherwise, I won't be able to know it at all. So the whole inquiry process leads us to some sort of a startling conclusion that I am actually the consciousness in which all these different objects and peoples and things are appearing. I am not one of the objects that is appearing in me. This body, mind, body with all its different processes and functions, the mind with its thoughts and feelings and emotions, I know them because they appear in me, the consciousness, as images and sounds and sensations. So I am not that object B from where this information is traveling to me. I am this object A in which this information is actually being known. And this appearance of images and sound and sensations have to be integral to me, have to be within me. And that's the only way that I can know it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would not be able to know it at all. And so this is a way for us to inquire into our experience and notice that I am actually consciousness, pure consciousness, in which all these appearances of objects, things, and people arise. And before we discuss this and make it an interactive session, one more thing I wanted to mention is that this consciousness in which the whole world is appearing is all we ever experience. Then we can always question, then what is the need of an actual external world for me to go through this kind of an experience? Because if at all times, the only thing I'm ever experiencing is appearance in me, the consciousness, then what is the actual need of having something external to trigger this kind of experience in me? I being consciousness itself, I'm a sentient entity itself. I do not need an insentient object outside to trigger something in me. An insentient object cannot have more control over me, because an insentient cannot control the sentient. A machine cannot control a human. A human can control a machine. An insentient cannot control, the insentient objects cannot control the sentient consciousness. It has to be the other way around. And so if I am consciousness and the only thing I ever experience is appearances within me, then what is the real need of an external entity, an entity external to me? And when we get to that conclusion, we are now able to see everything and appearance in the real me. And we do not take anything separate from me. We do not identify with a limited entity called this body mind, because that's just one of the things that is appearing in me. Just like everything else is appearing in me, this body mind is also appearing in me. Then why do I take myself to be this limited thing that is appearing in me versus taking myself to be that infinite consciousness in which everything is appearing? Okay, so I spoke a lot, but let's see if there are any questions or anything that you want to discuss.
That's like so much to think about. It's mind blowing, really. I mean, yeah. We've got a book. The book is not conscious, but we are conscious. We can see the book. We can interpret the book. The book can't interpret us.
Yes.
That's a very basic way of looking at it, right?
Yep.
So in a way, we recognize the book because we understand the qualities of it, and we have some of the qualities within us too that we can recognize it.
Yes.
What do you guys think about all this?
So it sounds like you were saying that we are nothing and we are everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm saying when we say we are nothing means we are not a particular thing. We are this pure consciousness in which everything is arising, in which everything is appearing. And that is all we ever know, because it is integral to us. That is the only way we can know it, because it is integral to us. Otherwise, we will not be even able to know it in any way. So yes, we are this pure consciousness. It's not that we are nothing. We are this pure consciousness, but we cannot call ourselves as a limited thing which is appearing in consciousness. We have to own it up completely.
So I was a little confused in the beginning of your talk when you talked about being permanent, mm-hmm. because everything is always changing. So how can both be this
excellent question
at the same time?
Excellent question. So when we take ourselves to be an entity which is appearing in consciousness, then we are not able to see how we are permanent, because anything that is appearing in consciousness is ever changing. But the consciousness itself is not changing. Because if the consciousness itself was changing, how would it know the change of the things that are appearing in it?
So basically, I think another example is we identify with the body, but the body is changing all the time. we age. We're not in the same body we were in when we were born or when we went through puberty or, you know, when we started growing up and we're getting older and the gray hairs are coming and the wrinkles are coming. We're changing. The body is changing all the time. But that same consciousness within us that we were born with, we can look back and see our memories. Oh, I remember when my dad took me to the circus when I was 8 years old. That's that same consciousness that doesn't change. It's that link that is, you know, I identify as Lisa that is still here in this changing body. And then whenever the body dies, that consciousness cannot die. So that's what is permanent, not the body. The body's not permanent, but the consciousness is permanent.
Absolutely.
Is that a good way of saying it, Nitin? I'm not sure.
Yes, absolutely. Very well said. Like if we just look at our body itself, as you said, our body has been through so many different stages. It has been very different at different stages of our life. And we know by science also that no cell is able to survive more than like a few years. 7-10 is probably the max, I think, that any cell can survive. So every 10 years, we actually really have a completely new body. And so, but we still feel a continuity. I don't say that, oh, it was some other entity 10 years ago. And now there is this another entity 10 years later. We don't say that. We say, no, I am the same. I was there when this body was a kid's body, and I am the same when now this body is a middle-aged body, and I will be the same when this body is an old-age body. Even though the body has completely changed, then how come I'm able to say that I am the same entity? And that's only possible if I myself, which is pure consciousness, as we have sort of come to know, or it's been hinted upon through this inquiry, that if I am pure consciousness and all of these things are appearing in me, including this body, then only I can say I am unchanging. And everything that is appearing, including the body, is changing. And so once I'm able to know who I truly am, which is pure consciousness, and once I'm able to know that that pure consciousness is lasting, then I can live life accordingly, be in harmony with what I truly am, live life accordingly, and then I will be in a state of lasting peace and joy, more permanent peace and joy. If I take myself to be a changing entity, which is this body-mind, then even though I might struggle to be in harmony with it, but I will not be able to get into a state, because it is an ever-changing world. In an ever-changing entity, you cannot try to go harmoniously and be with in peace and joy at all times. There is no way. And then we don't even have to. That's the beauty of this. We don't even have to, because we are not even this changing entity that we take ourselves to be. We are actually a lasting permanent entity. And we just have to know it and live life accordingly. So any other questions?
Well, I'm shocked. Are you saying as you age, your hair gets gray and white and your beard? this is astounding to me, but I guess I'll live with it.
Yeah.
But I did want to say one thing that you brought up that I've done as I've grown older, is that rather than saying, hey, this is what's going on, I always say, oh, I'm seeing this as that. What I'm seeing is this. In my opinion, this is what's happening. Because the statement of the absolutes may have a completely different interpretation than someone else. So you go, oh, look, this thing's happening. And they go, oh, I don't see that. If you say, oh, it looks to me like this is happening, then it's your opinion, your interpretation of the reality of life. Mm-hmm. And that always goes over better than making a complete absolute statement that someone else may not see in the same interpretation. So it's a good point to say it's always your assessment of what's going on in the reality that you're in, your consciousness that you're expressing, not an absolute on it. So good point.
Right. And one example that we hear all the time at the Vedanta Society is about Ramakrishna, who was an avatar, God incarnate on this planet to teach all of us a lot of these lessons by the life he lived. And towards the end of his life, he had throat cancer. And so it was obviously very painful. He could hardly swallow or eat or talk. And the monks would ask him in the morning, "Oh, Maharaj, how are you?" And he goes, "I'm great." And they're like, "Wait, but what about your throat? Oh, you're asking about the throat? Yeah, there's a little pain there, but I feel great," you know? So he definitely did not identify with the body. The body was a temporary vehicle through which he could experience the world, and he saw it as such.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very good example. Very good story about Sri Ramakrishna. And many monks have experienced or said similar things. There was a monk, I don't know, Swami Sarvananda tells his story that he was going through some sort of an operation and he did not take any anesthesia because he was able to disconnect from this body to such an extent that he can just look at it objectively and say, okay, there is an operation going on. There is a sensation of pain in that part of the body, but that's not me. I am pure consciousness, unchanging. I'm not affected by any of this. Like, When I say we are not affected by any of this, again, we look at our experience. Let's say there is a fire burning. I know the fire is burning, but does it really affect me, the consciousness, in any way? The fire was not burning earlier and I was the same. While the fire is burning, I'm the same. And when the fire will stop burning, I will still be the same. It hardly leaves any mark on me, the consciousness. Let's say there is somebody who comes with a sword and tries to, you know, maybe move the sword through the air in front of us. I'm aware of that sword. I'm aware of this motion of the sword, which could be a cutting motion. But I was there before the sword was there in appearing in me. I am while the sword is appearing, and I will be there even after the sword will start. Will not appear anymore in me. No mark is left on me, the consciousness. I am ever unaffected, unchanged. And that is why in the Gita, Sri Krishna says that water cannot dissolve it, fire cannot burn it, you know, weapon cannot destroy it, air cannot dry it. Because this consciousness, which is aware of all of these things, itself never gets affected. Mm-hmm. Because it's
another example that we talk about is the sky. Like, you can look up and see a blue sky, but an airplane goes through it. There's not a mark where the airplane was. A cloud can pass by, but just because the cloud's there, you don't think, oh, now the sky's going to have a cloud in it forever. No, the cloud moves across. You know, the sun can go down and now the sky's black. But the sky is always the sky is always the sky. Yeah. The cars that pollute it don't stain it or wreck it or anything. It looks like it's changing, but it's not changing. And that's how consciousness is through our eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah, we can see that in the sky or space or even light, sunlight, for example. Sunlight will illumine a pleasant looking flower and a dirty looking, say, pond. Both are being illumined by sunlight, but sunlight itself is not affected. So same way, consciousness, many different types of things can appear in consciousness, in me, the consciousness. It can appear, it can go, no problems, but I am never affected by any of it because I always remain this pure consciousness, which is just knowing these things, but is not affected by it. And that's the reason why it's also called the witness consciousness. It's like knowing, but not affected by it. It's not attached to anything. Things can come and go. Like, when we are seeing something, do we really feel like when an object is moving in front of me, do we feel like a part of me is moving? Or do I feel like, no, I am stationary, but just something is moving in front of me? So consciousness is also called to be partless because it's not that there is a part of consciousness which is getting converted into or getting transformed into a particular object, and then that object, when it moves, that part of the consciousness moves along with it. That is not what we experience. What we experience is that we remain partless. We remain unchanged. Objects appear, they might move, they might not move. I cannot say that a part of me has moved along with that object. If that would happen, then I would be like completely, you know, transfigured, because parts of me will keep transforming into different objects and keep moving from here and there. And I would be like completely disfigured. But that is not the case. I remain partless, just like the space. The space remains partless. Objects come and go in the space. But the space itself is not affected. It's not moving along with those objects.
Yeah, and think of it this way. This is how we can apply it to our daily lives too. Like we talked about the physical. If the arm breaks, it heals. You know, it doesn't affect the consciousness. We know that, right? But think about this way. Your boss yells at you. Your ego may be bruised. Your thoughts, your emotions may arise in anger or fear that you're going to lose your job. But that consciousness is unaffected. So instead of identifying with the fear or the anger, if you identify with that pure consciousness and know that I'm unaffected by this, this is just something that's coming and going, then you know you're okay. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have 2 minutes.
I just want to thank you. I've seen you at Malibu when we were all meeting at Malibu, and it's really been wonderful. And I have many more questions, so please come back.
Oh, you will. I'll make him.
Lisa, thank you. That's it. I'm not closing it out. I just wanted to say thank you.
No, I have. I met you in Malibu, and I think in one of the times in the Center of Spiritual Living as well, when I was just visiting.
Yes, I know. I know you have been, and it's your presence today has just been wonderful and brilliant. Your light is brilliant.
I'm very happy to be here and meeting everybody again.
Yeah, Nitin's a natural teacher. I think this is his dharma. Part of his dharma is teaching. It's a good way of bringing it down to what we need to hear.
I don't know. It's all grace of God that if anything good has come out of this talk today or this discussion today, it's definitely grace of God.
Does anybody have any questions before we wrap it up? Because we're getting close to 11.
No questions, but I also wanted to say thanks, because one of the things that I've been doing all my life is putting science into the spirituality that we're talking about. And I love how Nitin was able to connect that science, these are the facts of science, with the way we feel and interpret our lives. So very, very good. Thank you very much.
Great. I'm glad it was useful.
Anybody else? This is your chance. Okay, well, thank you all for being here, and we'll be back in February, the fourth Sunday, 10 a.m. This is the same channel. Tell your friends. I'll put it on the newsletter and social media. And thank you, Nitin, so much. You're amazing.
Thank you.
We adore you.
Everybody.
All right, so let's do our chant out. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. All right, and I'm speaking at Center for Spiritual Living, Pleasant Valley's Facebook Live from 12 to 1 with Pam. So you can go to Facebook on the Center for Spiritual Living, Pleasant Valley's in an hour, and I'll see you there. All right, thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.